Okay, well, I want to welcome those of you that are here. I'm Patty Ripler, and I'm the founder and the program director at Hand in Hand Parenting. And today we're very fortunate to have Laura Kaufman, Dr. Laura Kaufman, with us. And I'll introduce her a little more fully in a moment. There are about 160 people who signed up for this call, and they haven't all arrived yet. So I'm going to take 2 or 3 minutes and tell you a little bit about Hand in Hand Parenting. And just introduce you to our organization so that you have an idea of what it is we offer and what resources are available to you. And after that, most people will have gotten here and they'll be ready to, you know, dive into what Laura has to present to us about building children's confidence through play. And we'll let her give us her thoughts at first, and I'll come in with some thoughts and ideas and anecdotes about how things can work well between parents and children in play to build kids' confidence. Second, and then we'll open it up for what I hope will be lots of questions. Third, so it should be a good rich hour. So things you need to know about Hand in Hand really briefly are that we're a nonprofit. This is our 25th year, and our goal is to see that parents are very well supported, both with good emotional support. We try to show parents how they can build support for one another using listening exchanges as one of the methods of bringing sort of more resource to the work of parenting than the parents usually get. And we offer what we call listening tools, parent-child listening tools, to help parents connect well with their children and to help parents be of significant help to their children so that they can build their children's confidence, so that when a child has gotten really, really frightened and then has an aversion to a certain activity or a certain person or a certain time of day, that the parent has tools to go in and help the child with those big feelings that keep them from enjoying their day fully and from being confident. So we offer parents ways to connect with children and ways to offload their own emotional tension with another adult, and how to help their children offload emotional tension in laughter or a good cry or a good tantrum so that they don't stay stuck with big feelings inside that sort of curtail their activities in the world and that weigh on their confidence. So, and we have consultants who can help you one-on-one. We have 100 or so articles. You can just, you know, search your topic on our homepage. You can search, you know, potty training, or you can search, you know, children lying. What do I do when my child doesn't tell me the truth? You can search teens. You can search picky eaters. You know, lots and lots of various challenges that parents run into, and we'll give you the parenting by connection perspective on it. That's the approach that we use. Is one that highlights the deepening the connection between parent and child in order to fuel the child and help them think well and learn lots and feel at home in the world. So I think that's enough about us. And I'd like to introduce Dr. Laura Kaufman. She's a licensed child psychologist in private practice in Menlo Park, very near us in the Bay Area. And she specializes in treating children, adolescents, and adults who are working through feelings of worry and sadness. Laura has also published numerous articles and chapters on topics ranging from adolescent girls and depression to peer relationships during childhood. She's married. She is a fellow parent in the trenches with the rest of us. She has a 2.5-year-old boy and a little girl who's 5 months old. So she's a mom who's juggling a lot, and we're very fortunate to have you with us, Laura.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I want to welcome everyone, and thank you for joining us. It's a true honor and pleasure to be here today, and I just feel so lucky to be a part of the Hand in Hand organization and the opportunity to work with all of you and, you know, this fantastic collaboration, and it's just a really special opportunity to be a part of your journey on the path to becoming, you know, the thoughtful and intentional parent that I know you all strive to be. And so today I wanted to talk to you very briefly about some of the benefits of play, but I want to speak more importantly about, you know, some tips and ideas in terms of how to play. And some of this may be a little more natural and fluid for some of you, but then I know it can be a little bit of a challenge for others, and that, you know, even myself, I can definitely run up against obstacles in terms of finding time to play with my children and, you know, really meeting them where they are. So let's get down to business. Let's talk a little bit about play. You know, this is the very important work of children. You know, and as you likely know, children of all ages love to play. It gives them opportunities to develop physical competence and the enjoyment of the outdoors. It helps them understand and make sense of their world. It teaches them how to interact with others, how to express and control emotions, how to develop problem-solving abilities. You know, indeed, research shows a strong link between play and all kinds of important abilities such as memory, self-regulation, oral language abilities, social skills, and success in school. So that's pretty compelling stuff, right? So not only does play offer all these amazing benefits, but it also provides a direct channel of communication between you and your child. So it provides this very fertile ground for nourishing the relationship between the two of you. The way I always think about it is that, you know, playtime gives the child the message that you are special, that you are worth my time, in a language that they can easily understand. So children spend so much time and effort each and every day trying to translate and understand the meaning and codes of the adult world. This reminds me of my almost 3-year-old son who is in a stage where he's constantly asking me, what's this? How does that work? Or what's that over there, Mama? You know, he's constantly pointing out things as we drive, asking me, you know, about these different little devices or whatever it may be that he's holding up and what's asking me for seemingly the 50th time in a day. You know, he's just trying to understand, what is it all about this world that I'm living in? Tell me all about it. But play comes naturally to children, and so he doesn't have to ask dozens of questions about that. Play is his domain, and your child is desperate to have you join him there. And so the payoff is big. So if you can make time and connect with your child where they are with their play, they feel seen, they feel acknowledged, they feel valued by you. Now, all of this pumps up their confidence and sense of self. So your precious child is thinking, wow, you know, Dad likes to do what I like to do, and I'm someone worth stopping to spend time with. But ironically, the how-to of play that comes so naturally to children is not so fluid and natural for adults. So many of us forget how to play. You know, we're often weighed down with the responsibilities of adult life. So, you know, many parents, whether a stay-at-home dad or a working mom, you know, they might struggle to stop, put aside adult agendas, and let go of ideals of what, you know, should be happening in this moment. And if they do take the time, sometimes they want to you know, direct their children a little bit more, like, no, you can't do it this way. Here, you know, set it up that way. This will make it stronger or something like that. So we're often tempted to try and direct the play. Our heads are filled with all these certain scripts of how certain interactions, you know, typically or should work. However, the most productive kind of play is fluid and creative. So, of course, safety and respect rules apply, but otherwise, in my opinion, you know, the sky is the limit. So how do we play? How do we try and sort of drop some of these shackles of, you know, being an adult that sometimes get in the way of really being in the moment with the child? And I think some of it comes down to, you know, just make playtime, you know, with your child a priority. And so I recommend, you know, at least 10 minutes every day, you know, with each child. If you have two or more children, try and set aside 10 minutes for each child. And to facilitate things, you could schedule time with your child so both you and she know exactly when it's going to occur, you know, what to expect. And so I think that there's probably more, but I think there are about two types of play that I think are probably most relevant to this conversation. So the first type is child-directed, unstructured play that could occur in the context of, you know, special time with your child. So for those of you who are not familiar with special time, it is a dedicated period of time between one caregiver and one child. And it's complete and total focus time with your child in which you allow your child to direct the play. You just take their lead and just go along for the ride, essentially. And I think the key is to get in the right mindset before special time or this play period. So you need to put your phone or other portable devices away, turn off the TV, close the computer, and it might even be useful to post a reminder on the refrigerator or another prominent place, reminding yourself of your goals and values in regard to your child and play. So something that we have on our refrigerator is a little mantra that says, I play to connect with you. I play to nourish you. I play because it is good for me, too. I'm very lucky. I'm married to a very playful spouse, and he's always looking for adventure and fun. So this is something that he's kind of cultivated in our family. And so it's something that, you know, I have to work to aspire to as well. So get down to your child's level and ask them what they want to do. You know, what would you like to do today during our special time? And try and resist the temptation to make suggestions. I think children learn important decision-making skills from these kinds of exchanges. So like in my own clinical work with children, I've noticed, you know, I tend to work with a lot of anxious children, and I've noticed that a lot of them have difficulty making a choice about play. And so I think it's very therapeutic to wait patiently, let your child know that there is no rush to make a choice. You know, whatever choice they make, it will turn out just fine. And then once the decision is made, let them take the lead. And then do your best to avoid imposing a structure or limits on the play. So your goal is just to focus 100% on your child with an air of like unconditional love and acceptance. So just sometimes I imagine that you're sort of taking on the job or responsibility of a sports commentator, you know, at some sort of sporting event. So try and report on what you are seeing during the play. So observe and report out the direction of the play. So, for instance, you might say, oh, you're driving the car back and forth to bring the moms and papas to work all the way from home. And you can look for opportunities to help your child express and process emotions during this time. You know, play can be a very, very productive tool for uncovering and working through emotions just under the surface. So if you happen to notice during the play that the driver of the car seems to be getting frustrated, you could say, oh, the driver's getting angry. He doesn't like what happened to his friend. So you will facilitate very important work, you know, your child is doing, you know, to make sense of big feelings. And then there's a second type of play that Patty and the folks at Hand in Hand, you know, referred to as play listening, you know, that nourishes the parent-child relationship, helps your child's self-confidence bloom and offload tension and stress. So you take the lead in this play. It's a form of, this is my interpretation and description of it, a form of exaggerated silliness that playfully tackles different underlying feelings head on. So this type of play can also be scheduled, but it might occur more frequently when you notice your child is displaying some intense feelings or struggling with a difficult moment. So Patty will touch upon this kind of play in more detail, but I mention it by way of describing a second kind of play that is focused upon helping a child express and release emotion and tension from their day. So, you know, essentially, play is the native language of children and is the ideal tool for connecting with your child and helping them to learn new skills, process big feelings, and most importantly, to feel important and grow in self-confidence. So, ideally, understanding the important benefits of this playtime and working to get into the right mindset will allow you to find a way to be with your child, grow in your connection, and their self-confidence.
Thank you. Thank you. Do you want to give us any examples of, you know, just from either your practice or home? Just how do your children use special time, for instance?
Sure. So, one example that comes to mind is, as Patty mentioned, I have a 5-month-old daughter, and after she was born, my husband and I had anticipated that my son, who is 2.5, almost 3, that he would have some reactions and feelings to, you know, the birth of my daughter, his sister. And so overall, my son has done very well. However, there have definitely been moments where he would come over and kind of give her little pinches on the feet. Or I've even seen him, you know, sort of like raise a little fist like above her head and, you know, give her a little playful bats or not so playful bats. And it was very frustrating for us at first. And I must admit that our first reaction was to send him to timeout. And it was just sort of this natural like reaction of like, oh, we have to separate the two of them. Let's put him in his room so that he can take a break and try and come back when he's feeling better. But we noticed that it just did not influence or decrease his behavior at all. And so finally, you know, my sleep-deprived sort of awareness, I finally came to recognize, I see, this is about, you know, the lack of connection that he's feeling with me in particular because I'm spending so much time with my daughter, you know, particularly nursing her and just, you know, holding her. And so I made a lot of effort to, whenever I could, to put my daughter down, you know, when she was sleeping in the bassinet. And normally when I would maybe want to take a little nap or want to do the dishes, I would go straight to my son. And I'd say, like, you know, what do you want to do? You want to play? And he would excitedly say, yeah, let's build blocks or let's do a puzzle. And I would say that it was almost immediate, you know, probably within 2 or 3 days that the, you know, aggression and behavior that we'd seen toward my daughter just dropped significantly because I think he was feeling connected to me and he was feeling seen and just acknowledged again and knew that, you know, he was still very important and, you know, very much loved by me and my husband as well. And so I just really made an effort to start integrating special time, you know, with my son whenever and wherever I could. I mean, it turned out to be more than 10 minutes because my daughter takes a lot of little cat naps. And I thought that that really made a big difference for us.
Great. You know, what a good example. That's, yeah. Thank you. It looks like one of our callers has a question already. Are you open to taking a question?
Absolutely.
At this point? Okay. Mm-hmm. Someone from around Beverly Hills, I'm opening up your line. What's your question?
Hi, I have a 2.5-year-old, and my question is more kind of like around special time. We started doing special time maybe a few months ago, and recently we just introduced her to like the iPhone and like, you know, TV time as rewards for good behavior at school. She was having some aggressive behaviors at school. But now she's come to us, like, basically think that special time is synonymous with, like, using the iPhone. And it's, you know, it's time-bounded. It's 5 minutes. But I'm wondering if there's any ways, I know, if, you know, I'm not supposed to necessarily be making suggestions, but I'm wondering if there's any other way to kind of introduce other types of play for special time, or should I just always do, you know, the 5 minutes of phone time if that's what she's wanting?
I have an answer, but Laura, what would you say?
Well, I think my first reaction is that I think it's appropriate to have the 5 minutes, but I would probably label that under a different category than special time. And I would maybe say something to the effect of, wow, I know playing with the phone is so much fun. And I want you to be able to enjoy, you know, time to, like, my son really likes to look at pictures on my phone. Like, you know, I know that he really likes to look, you know, to look at pictures or to do these things on the phone, and we'll do it for 5 minutes. But special time is a little different. And special time is when you and I get together and we get to play together, because when you're looking at the phone, it's not as easy for us to play together. So special time is going to be just a separate time and period for us during the day where we get together and we do something of your choosing. But a phone is not going to be a part of that, and we'll do that at a different time of the day.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
And I guess what I usually say about, you know, screen, you know, behaviors like that, you know, your child dives for the candy, they want to eat candy during special time, or they want to, you know, go spend money during special time if they're older, or they want screen time. I think that if the parent can work on their, you know, if you can get some listening time on what bugs you about your child wanting screen time or your child being stuck on trains and the only thing they ever want to do is play trains, and you've had it up to, you know, up to your ears with trains. It can make a big difference to get some listening time, sort of, you know, laugh about, you know, how you would really love to say, you know, I never want to see another train again, you know, and go ahead and say it many times to your listening partner. So that you're offloading your upsets about, and you're, you know, not liking that kind of play anymore. So that you, part of you doesn't close off when your child does that thing. I think it's incumbent on us when we have difficulties with the way our child wants to play. It's our responsibility to see if we can move that for ourselves so that our hearts don't close and our attention doesn't, you know, our eyes don't cross when they, you know, head for the thing that they just love. And in a way, before you set a limit on that kind of thing, you want to push push your own upsets about it out of the way so that you're not setting a limit because you just can't stand it. You're setting a limit to help your child. It's really two different things. And I think that no matter what a child chooses, you can still connect around it. You can still offer more eye contact. You can still offer more physical contact. You can still keep your voice really warm and interested. And that before you set a limit on something that's a little hard for you or that looks a little stuck, I think you want to climb into it 100% and just go and then say, okay, I'm doing 5 more special times with the iPhone just the way she wants it, you know. And after the 5 more times, if it doesn't move, if she can't think of anything else, you know, then you say, okay, our next special time is going to be a no iPhone special time. And you can think what you want to do, but it's not going to be iPhone, you know, or it's not going to be TV, or it's not going to be candy. And then, you know, see if your child may have a big cry about why can't it be the iPhone, and that would be fine. It's like those are feelings that are blocking their ability to think of, you know, any other thing besides this one thing that they feel comforts them. And once they've had a good cry, you know, they'll be able to think of something good. So I think once you've challenged yourself, you know, then it's okay to set a limit, but you really want to try to connect around the thing so that you don't give up on the power of your attention, because your attention is still very powerful even if they're playing on the iPhone. And you don't want to give up on that too soon.
Yeah, I think that was a good point about getting listening time about it, because I actually didn't really feel like I had a problem with the phone. It's just that I felt like the special time wasn't really serving the purpose, because I would sit there and watch with her and comment on what we're watching, but I just didn't feel like we were really connecting. I felt like she was more just kind of, you know, looking at the phone. And I mean, I was there, and she would say, yeah, come watch with me. And so I guess on some level we were connecting, but I just didn't feel like we were getting what, I guess, my preconceived notion of what type of connection we're supposed to be getting out of this special time.
I think what you want to shoot for is becoming an adept connector no matter what the heck your child chooses. However irritating it might be, you kind of want to shoot for, let me see if I can connect around that. It's a good challenge.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Let's see, I think I'm just going to talk a little bit here before we open it up for more questions, and just give some anecdotes about, just talk a little bit in a little bit more detail about what we call play listening, which is a way of playing that gives the child the very explicit upper hand. And when children are afraid or shy or they've had an experience that they just, you know, they really couldn't process and it's got them all anxious, when they're aggressive with other children, play listening is the tool that you can use sort of almost surgically to help your child with a very specific issue. And what you want to do is lay a foundation of special time. It's kind of like you don't want to jump play listening on your child without having there be play where they get to direct you. It's kind of like that's the first step, is you do the kind of special time that Laura was talking about. But second, when you notice that your child is having trouble with something, you can find a way to take the less powerful role and give them a chance to you take the problem on. So, for instance, my granddaughter was afraid to go to gymnastics. She loved gymnastics. She really wanted to go. But her mommy sat there with her on the bench at gymnastics when she was 3 years old, and she wouldn't go into the class for 6 or 7 weeks. And then they finally kind of called me in saying she really wants to go, but she can't, you know. And what I did was first a little stay listening, because big fears often offload in crying. So I just took her to gymnastics. I took her an hour early, actually, and I said, you know, we are going to go into gymnastics today. We're not going to just sit there. And she has burst into tears, and I just, you know, I climbed into the back seat with her, and she cried and cried and cried. No, I don't want to go in. I don't want to. I don't want to. And I just, you'll be safe. You know, you'll be safe. I'll be right there. I'll be watching you every minute. She just cried and cried and cried. So I basically set an expectation that she was going in. And it took the whole hour, and she didn't look ready to go in. So I figured at the end of that hour, you did a good job. We're just going to go peek at what they're doing, and then I'll hold you, and then I'm going to take you home. And then the next week, we did the same thing, and she had another cry. But while she was crying, it was so interesting. After about 15 or 20 minutes, she was kind of crying in my lap, and then she rolled her body around, and I'd open the door because it was hot. And she rolled her body around so that her foot was touching the parking lot, you know. And I thought, oh, you know, you are ready to get out of the car. She was still crying, and she didn't look like it was a conscious move. And I said, you know, it looks like you're ready to go over to gymnastics. We'll open the door. And she cried a few more minutes. And then I said, I'll hold you. We'll go peek in, see what they're doing. And she was okay with that. So I grabbed her, and I, you know, we walked over, and I opened the door a little bit, and I went, oh my gosh. And then I ran back to the car with her in my arms. Oh, phew, you know, we're safe. And she laughed, you know. And I looked at her and said, should we go take another peek? And she nodded, you know. So we tiptoe over, and I opened the door a little wider, and we just a two-second look. And then, oh, I got to get out of here. And so I was the one that was scared to peek in. And she was in my arms, and she laughed and laughed. And we ran across that parking lot. It was like, that was definitely my gym day. We ran across that parking lot probably 30 times, and just with her laughing at me, you know, running away from gymnastics, being too scared to put my head in. And then, you know, I'd say, well, shall I put my foot in this time? I don't know if I can do it. And she'd nod yes. And so I'd put my foot in, and then, you know, run away, and then 2 feet in, and then, you know. And so I was the scared one, but I got a little closer every time. And by the time gymnastics was over, we'd laughed a whole bunch. And then the next week, we went over, and, you know, I sort of did the same thing, kind of titrating little closer, and then I dared her to go in and put her foot on the mat, and she did it and ran back in my arms, and I hugged her. And so basically laughter offloads fear. And sometimes children need a good cry about things they're scared about in order to get the heavy-duty work done, get the big fear feelings out. But if you're paying attention, and if you're positive, and if you have confidence, the lack of confidence pours out, and they internalize the confidence that you are sending them by not being afraid of the fact that they're upset. And once they're laughing, confidence builds really nicely and quickly. And so the time after that, she went in and she did the whole gymnastics thing. She hardly looked at me from across the room. I think she looked at me twice during the whole hour. She's so proud of herself, and she's, you know, never been afraid of a group of people again. And that's one use of play listening. I think there's another example. There's a little boy in the preschool that I ran a long time ago who'd had like 7 surgeries because he'd had a cleft palate, and it was a severe cleft palate. And so by the time he came to our preschool, he'd had 7 surgeries, and he needed 3 more, which happened over the period of the next 4 years. And he was this very timid, tiny little weakling of a child, you know, didn't really run, didn't have any kind of a loud voice, just kind of minced around the classroom, and was really afraid to try a lot of things. Just too many surgeries had really, you know, worn down his ability to feel strong in the world, and it showed all over him. And what we wound up doing with him was I got a bean bag, and what let him laugh the most was if I climbed under the bean bag, and then I put my hand out and I tried to find him. It's like, Aaron, where are you? You know, and he would laugh and laugh and laugh, and my hand was like 2 inches outside of the bean bag, and I couldn't see where he was, but my hand was clearly flailing around trying to find him, and he danced around the bean bag and laughed and laughed and laughed. And my hand would poke here, and my hand would poke there, and sometimes it was like totally on the opposite side of where he was. He would laugh and laugh and laugh, and after we'd do this over and over again for long periods of time, laughter was just rolling off. And after a couple of weeks, he'd jump on the beanbag, and I'd go, "Oh, you know, who's that? Oh my gosh, they're so big!" You know, he'd laugh the more, and he just got bolder and bolder. And pretty soon, he's throwing himself into the beanbag, and pretty soon, my hand is coming out farther, and pretty soon, I'm touching his shoes, and he's laughing. And so I make myself a little more of a challenge, and he'd laugh and laugh and laugh. And his whole demeanor over that year, we'd play this game for half an hour every time he came. And his whole demeanor changed, and his ability to use his strength changed, because he was being pretty active in this play. And after a while, I could come out of the beanbag, and he wouldn't feel too challenged. But, you know, if I had come out of the beanbag, he would have, you know, it would not have been funny for him, because he needed to be a very non-threatening little thing that I was challenging him with, because he felt so weak. So it's just a few examples of how you can use play listening, and just, you know, once you get a child laughing and you're not tickling them, that's really important that the laughter not be kind of cheaply won. Tickling will win you laughter, but it's not healing anything, because you're actually overpowering the child. Like, you're deciding when and where to touch. So in general, we don't think tickling has a therapeutic effect, but when you're taking the less powerful role, it really does, and it's a very flexible tool. You can use this with older children as well. So I'll do an older children anecdote, and then we'll open this up for questions, I think. But one of our instructors has a 9-year-old boy and a 6-year-old daughter, and as siblings do, they were getting after each other, and they were both laying on the living room floor, and the boy was kind of poking her daughter with his leg, and she was laying there whining, "Stop, stop." And the more she would whine, the more he would poke, and it was just this little thing that was going on, and she could figure out that, you know, they both needed connection somehow. So the first thing she thought of was, well, I'll lay down in between them. And she lay down in between them thinking that that would help, and it didn't. What happened was, Her daughter put her leg over her mom so that the brother could kick it and bother her. She was really into being the victim. And so her brother complied, and the kicking continued. And then the mom was trying to think, okay, how can I turn this into play listening? And since, I don't know how she managed to do this, but it occurred to her to sing, "Stop in the name of love. You're before you break my heart." And she burst into song, this "Stop in the Name of Love" song. And both of her children just, they looked and they started laughing, and they know that song. So, you know, within 2 minutes, they were all singing and laughing and, you know, just emoting all over the floor. And the whole "I poke you and you be the victim" thing just evaporated. And they laughed and laughed, and you know, 5 minutes later, the incident was forgotten. It's like they were together, they were laughing, it was funny. Their mom hadn't, you know, gotten all serious on them. So it's a good tool for intervening when kids are kind of stuck out in limbo with each other and good things are not happening. If you can give one of them a vigorous snuggle, or, you know, one's calling the other one stupid, you can just go, "Oh, anybody who says the word stupid, I just hang them upside down and shake that word right out of their mouth," you know. And so a child, of course, they'll look at you and they'll go, "Stupid," you know, and you go over and you pick them up and you shake them upside down. It's like, "I know that word can get out of your mouth, so I'm going to shake it out, whatever I do," you know. And then they're laughing and laughing, and so they'll say "stupid" 20 times in order to get you to play with them. But the whole time they're laughing, the sting is coming out of the out of the, you know, the words they were using. And, you know, the other child wants to be, you know, hung upside down and shaken too. So they'll say a silly word and, oh no, not another word. I'll have to get you, you know, and then you hang them upside down and shake them too. And it's, what you're doing is diffusing this, the lack of connection. You're connecting, and the more connected children feel, the less they want to insult one another or be hard on one another. And so, you know, you wind up setting up a little signaling system, you know, in your house for, you know, here's what I do when I need connection. And sometimes it's stuff that isn't socially acceptable. You know, they'll come in the kitchen and they'll go, stupid, you know, and then you run around after them for, you know, for 2 minutes, get laughter going, and then you give them a big hug and you go, you know, let's figure out what to do here. And you do a little problem solving. Now they're connected. Now you can figure out how to make their day a little bit better. And you don't have, you know, lousy language popping out of their mouths, so, you know, at random times. So those are some thoughts about how you can use play listening to get around sticky spots and help children feel more confident. So if you have a question for either Laura or me, you can hit star 2 on your phone, and I'll see that you have it, and we'll open up the lines one by one. Anybody got a situation they can't figure out how to play with? Okay, someone from Old Greenwich, Connecticut.
Oh, yeah, that's me. Hi. I have a question about tickling. I was doing some playing with my boy last night, a 3-year-old, and we were on his bed, and he has a puzzle of Donald Duck or Uncle Donald, the uncle with the little nephews that are hitting him with pillows, and he's never had a pillow fight before. He doesn't have any siblings, and he wanted to have a pillow fight. So we did the pillow fight, and I wasn't consciously doing play listening. But it was pretty much that, even though I wasn't. And then after it was his bedtime, and he was going to pick a book. And he has a lot of great books, but he picked this thing that was a little photo album for a baby. It's something we never used. It's just plastic. There's really nothing in it except empty slots for pictures and a few little drawings of bugs around it, but that's what he wanted to read. So we were going through the book, and he was asking about the bugs, and I guess I was kind of just wanting to get away from that book because it's not a book. And he said, well, what kind of bug is that, Mom? I said, oh, well, that's a cootie bug. And I went over and, like, zapped him, like, kind of tickled his ribs. And he loved it so much. And I kind of knew in your teaching you don't really like tickling. But now he wants to do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So is that okay? I mean, he wants me to tickle him, but he not all the time, but a lot, he'll say, can we read this book? And he'll point purposely, because I kind of said, oh, that one's a bee, because one looks like a bee and one looks like a butterfly, and then there's one that just has weird antennas. That's why I said it was a cootie bug. So now he says, oh, Mom, what bug is that? Is that a bee? And I'll say, uh-huh. And I'll say, oh, is that a worm? Is that the butterfly? What one's that one, Mom? And, you know, it's the cootie bug.
Yeah.
So what do we do?
You got a little thing going.
My quick answer is that
you get to be the judge. It's like we can offer ideas, and but you're the mom, and you see what's going on, and, you know, you need to think for yourself, no matter how, you know, which parenting expert you're thinking you're hearing from. But I would say that you can get the same reaction by wiggling your fingers next to his ribs. Oh, here I come, with a great big, you know, warm, expectant look on your face, and just wiggle your fingers. And that will probably be enough to make the laughter between the two of you happen. I think children go towards tickling because we look merry when we do it, and they want us to look that way. We kind of look excited. We look expectant. We look warm, and they want all of that. And I think you can get all of that without, you know, without forcing the laughter if you don't touch, or you just touch a little bit, or nuzzling works really well. So you just bury your head in their belly. It's like touch is fine as long as it doesn't trap a child. So a little, you know, a little tickle is like, but sometimes we can't tell when children need us to stop. Laura, what's your thought there?
Yes, I mean, that's exactly what I was thinking, Patty, is that, I mean, it sounds like to a certain degree, you know, her son is enjoying that exchange because he gets to kind of be in charge of it. You know, he can sort of push the button to initiate, oh, you come toward me and you touch me in this fun and playful way. And, you know, are very excited and, you know, you say, like, you're feeling and looking, you know, with a, like, eye of warmth. But I think the worry and concern is always that it can turn so quickly to a point at which they're not comfortable and children, you know, then aren't in charge of it anymore. And I think that that's always the potential risk of tickling, you know. So tickling can be, I think, at times fun and exciting, but it's just, it can turn so quickly where they're not in control anymore and they're not feeling in charge of it. And then they can, you know, just feel not so comfortable with it. And so I think it's just, it's sort of a little bit of a risky, you know, sort of area. And so I think that your suggestions of maybe just making a little playful, you know, actions and, you know, toward the body, you know, and the little fingers. I mean, I think that that's a nice alternative so that you don't run the risk of, you know, crossing that line.
Mm-hmm. Can I just say something? I think now that you offered that, I think I get it, because the more I think about myself, I play with him a lot, and I think a lot of times I'm not 100%. Like, I think we play too much, to tell you the truth. I don't think I get enough other stuff done, but I don't think I'm 100% present, except when you go into that tickle mode, you do kind of get really into it. I think
mm-hmm.
that's true.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're right. Yeah. So I think he's noticing that in me, that I need to
yep.
put into shorter bursts of play with more pure intent.
And that's where special time is a handy tool, because you can say, let's do special time for 10 minutes. And you can, it demarks it, it marks it out for you. And if you give 100% during those 10 minutes, 5 minutes through when you're bored or you're like, oh my gosh, I have so much to do, you can go, okay, I only have 5 more minutes. The timer's going to go off. This has an end. And it's easier to give your 100% if it's timed. And, it's also, And it helps children notice that you are 100% when you call it something, when you time it and call it something. Then they can rely on you not to answer the phone. They can rely on you not to kind of just fade away or get distracted. And it's pretty powerful stuff when they can rely on you that way. And then you feel freer to do other things. Like, well, he just had special time, you know, half an hour ago, so I probably okay that I keep on ironing or keep on washing the dishes here. You know, he got plenty from me. So, yeah.
Can I just ask, I don't want to hog the time, but can I ask a quick question? He's not in school. His birthday's in December, and around here, if you don't get on board like a whole year ahead, you don't get into a preschool. It's just, they're just too filled up, and we didn't do it, and it's weird. There aren't many kids around. They're all in something all the time. I feel really frustrated. Like, I think I have this guilt feeling that he has no siblings. I grew up in a big family. I was in the era where you just went outside and played with everybody in the neighborhood all day. That's not our life at all. And I'm like, gosh, I kind of feel guilty that he's just hanging out kind of a lot. Well, he does a couple activities. He'll start preschool in the fall. He's dying to be with more kids, and that's why I'm playing with him so much that it's wearing me out, and
mm-hmm.
I'm not getting much done.
Yeah.
I mean, like, is there any kind of number on how many hours a day your kid can play by themselves and entertain themselves realistically at 3?
Laura, what do you say to that?
I don't think that there is any specific limit or number on how much time that they, you know, can play. I think they can play and would play just about all day, every day. You know, but one of the things that I was thinking as you were talking is that, you know, I think that it might be useful to consider one of the listening partnerships that, you know, Patty's talked about, or, you know, talking with some friends or, you know, trusted you know, parents who, you know, maybe are in your community Because I'm sure that there are other folks who are struggling with, you know, similar kinds of feelings and challenges. And I think what you described, I mean, sounds so familiar and understandable, you know, given that, you know, you're trying to be so present, but you're also struggling with some of these, you know, guilty feelings. And my guess is that, you know, some of that guilt is probably getting, you know, mixed up in there, and, you know, maybe it's clouding at times. You know, what choices or decisions you're making in any given moment. And I think if you could just sort of clear some of that up and free some of that up, it might help you to know, okay, now I can spend this moment taking care of this thing for me. And now I know that I can spend this dedicated special time, you know, with my son. You know, just my guess is that there's just a lot that's probably clouded up in your head. And if you have, you know, some really good, you know, close bonds and partnerships, or if you can find a listening partner, that might help to just free you from some of those worries and concerns, and, you know, and help you to, you know, sort of be a little bit more present in those moments with your son.
Yeah, you're right. Definitely. Thank you.
Yes. And I would just say, you know, there are adults out there who would benefit greatly from getting to know your son and playing with him. And, you don't have to be the only adult who spends time with him. So I would say if you're feeling cramped, probably good to do what's good for you. And if you can find a, you know, someone through your church or in your neighborhood, or, you know, the mother of a friend who would really like to take, you know, be with your son a couple hours, a couple mornings a week, go do that. If you can't find other children around, find another grown-up. It's really good for children to get to know other grown-ups and to, you know, feel their attention and get the benefit of the places where they are good with children. So that would be my thought there.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, I think we're gonna move on to another questioner now. Okay?
Thank you.
All right, sure. So let's see, this is Angie. Go ahead, Angela.
Yeah, hi. Is it me that you're asking for?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great. So my daughter is, she calls herself shy. I think her father might have driven that over in their house. I call her more slow to warm up, and she's starting mm-hmm. to talk now about how she was okay later on with something because she'd warmed up and things like that. I'm really looking for ideas on how to support her through that. As I said earlier, she's quite sensitive. So when I dropped her off in care this morning, she, one of their friends sort of looked at her, apparently with a furrowed brow. And my daughter said to me, you know, Leah just looked at me like that. And I didn't want to sort of get locked into an unpacking of what was happening emotionally there and then, because rightly or wrongly, wanted it to turn positive very quickly if I could, so I could get back and get, you know, my work started, you know, and this call. So I'm just wondering what sort of things I can do to support her as she sort of finds her assertiveness and finds her confidence and things like that socially, because, you know, she can be a real shy mitt, and lots of people don't sort of show respect for that, so they'll deliberately sort of like go, you know, try and challenge that in her when, you know, lots of my friends sort of try and challenge that in her when they first see her, and then they might back off a little bit, but yeah, I'm wondering, is it appropriate to sort of challenge it a little bit as well as, you know, letting her sort of grow into it, into herself? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you give me anything there?
Laura, you can go first. I have an idea, but go ahead.
Well, I was thinking, so I was wondering about some version of play listening, you know, with like sort of the, a take on the theme of the slow to warm up. I was sort of picturing like a tea kettle or something like that, that, you know, would slowly sort of, go to a boil. And I was just wondering if there might be some way that you could, you know, initiate a little bit of play listening around this theme of warming up, and that maybe you could go to her daycare a little earlier than usual, which I know, it can be difficult to get to daycare just on time, on any given day, but, you know, maybe you can really make an effort, on one or more days in a week to just try and set aside, okay, we're going to go 45 minutes early. And you could do some version of the slow to warm up, either that, like Patty had mentioned in terms of her granddaughter, you know, sort of, you know, being so like shy and careful to sort of walk in and what's going to happen and oh no, we have to run back. It's so scary and there's so much going on in there. Let's go take a peek and run back. Or, you know, playing with some version of, like tea kettles and, tea sets and things like that. We're going to set this on a very slow, boil until this will heat up very, very slowly. Who is this like? Is this like you? You know, you're sometimes you can be slow to warm up too, but sometimes you turn up the heat a little quicker. You know, you can just make up something, that might be a little sort of take on that theme. But if you just spend a little bit of extra time, one or more days in a week, you might be able to sort of get somewhere with that.
Yeah, and can I just verify then that one or so times a week can make the real difference, because one of the problems is, and I'm sure it's also, you know, a cause as well as an obstacle, is that we live a pretty chaotic life between work, study, kindy, or preschool as you might call it, daycare. Her father and I aren't together. We've never been together in her life, so she's constantly in between two houses. And then because, you know, I'm on my own with her, I try to, you know, richen up our social life a little bit with visits here, there and everywhere, as well as, you know, some time just for unstructured, you know, hanging out at home. So that time really, I think, is the greatest obstacle, but it might also be, a symptom of that she's sort of needs to slowly enter things.
My thought there is a couple of things. One is when a child, you know, when there's a tiny pretext for her feelings to come up when she first arrives, she's just looking for a way to work on the uncomfortable feelings. It's like, you know, someone could, you know, all somebody has to do is look at her a certain way and all those feelings come up because they have to, because that is how she feels when she gets there. And a play listening way that you could deal with that would be, oh no, she frowned at you? Oh, let me blow it off. I can blow it off of you. I can get that frown out and then just blow all over her, you know. Or let me dust off that frown. And then just make, you know, be really sort of a friendly, affectionate, dusting off the frown. Oh, I think some of it got on your back. Let me get that too. You know, and just sort of silly stuff. It's like when we take children's fears, you know, dead seriously, then the idea that there is something to be afraid of or there's something really serious going on is kind of reinforced. So just finding something silly to do with, oh, the frown, it landed in your ear. I'll get it out. See, I got it. What should we do with it? You want to stomp on it? You know, and then just you pretend you drop the frown and then you can stomp on it. And I don't know. It's like you might not get laughter. But it's probably worth a try. Yeah. And I think the other thing that I would say is that there's an awful lot of separation going on for her. There's two houses, there's going here, going there. And children don't, it's like most children have many hours of crying to do about any kind of separation whatsoever from their moms and dads. And what I saw when I was doing childcare was that children who just didn't, you know, have an easy time often had a lot of feelings about separation that they were just having to sit on. Yeah. And it made it so that they, because they couldn't feel their grief about leaving their parents, they were sort of waiting for their parents all day long. And if you allow a child to express that grief and really have a good cry about separation, they can actually get those feelings out of their way and they can be more present there. They can begin to have a good time. And I would guess that if you went to, you know, child care early and did special time with her and then began to say goodbye very slowly and very confidently, that after several days of doing some special time with her before you leave so that you really connect there and then she can feel the separation, it'll get safer for her to have a big cry about not wanting you to go.
Yeah.
And how you handle that in childcare, you kind of have to prepare the staff to listen to the crying, or you have to pick her up and take her outside to do your, you know, and that what you want to do is, we have an article on our website about helping children with separation. If you have the time, and hopefully you've carved the time out, then you just say, sweetie, I do need to go, and you're going to be safe here. You know, Miss Ann and Miss Lola are going to be very, very happy to be with you all day, and so are the other kids. And she'll just cry and cry and cry, and every time the crying slows down, you go, it's just about time for me to go. So you just make leave-taking a really long thing so she can work on the feeling of you going, but you are there to make it safe to work on that feeling. And it's a really good way to do it. And when you really do have to go, you want to take her in and have someone there be with her so that she's not left totally undone without support. But the more you can handle it yourself before you have to leave, the faster she'll move through it. And I think it's going to make her a more confident child to get those feelings about separation out of her way. And childcare may not be the best place if she can cry about not wanting to go to her daddy's or cry about not wanting to go to you after she's at her daddy's. That might be an easier place to take care of all of the feelings that are stuck in there. But I think once she's told them to you and once you've listened to them, I think she'll feel more sure of herself in lots of situations. That would be my thought.
I think she's doing fairly well, but there is underlying stuff there as well, and we do a lot of what you've just spoken of. So,
wonderful.
She's doing pretty well. I call it the curse of the child development worker, though I'm just acutely aware that there is more there. But I do enable her to cry a lot about her situations and, you know, things that come up. So I'm a big believer on helping those tears happen. I just want to clarify just quickly, you mentioned about the play listening and, you know, oh, she frowned at you, let me blow it off or dust it off and I'll stomp on it and things like that. Is there also then a place for going, oh, why do you think that might have been, or, you know, maybe it was because she was concentrating on what she was doing, or, you know, so that I'm starting to also explore social cues and the way that we interact with each other, you know, like as human, you know, like so exploring some of the nuances of what might be taking place at the time, or should I just go, you know, at this stage, you know, for a period, just go for it in a place by listening?
I think the way I would look at that is if she's unhappy about what just happened, she can't think. And any you know, interesting points you have to make about what that might have really meant or why it happened, all of that is just going to go right over her head because she can't think.
Yeah.
And what's going to help is a chance to connect, perhaps a chance to laugh, perhaps a chance to cry, or for you to bring her mind away from the insult onto something that is positive. But I wouldn't do that all the time. It's like I think when children feel hurt, it's not the time to try to explain to them all the ins and outs of what happened. It's really a time to move in very quietly. It's like the more you say, once a child has a feeling, the less likely they are to be able to offload the feeling because their mind is struggling to make sense of what you're saying rather than being able to drop in, notice the feeling, you know, feel it fully and offload it. So I would definitely be quiet rather than trying to talk a lot when she shows you she's upset.
Yeah,
I agree completely with Patty, and I think that it's something that you can always go back to later, maybe that evening. And one of my favorite ways to raise things is to say, you know, I was thinking about this morning, and I was remembering when Leah looked at you, and that really bothered you, and, you know, and I was just kind of reflecting on that, and I just wonder, I wonder if maybe, you know, I wonder if maybe Leah, maybe she was thinking about something else when she looked at you. Maybe that, you know, love wasn't directed at you at all, or, you know, just kind of process it a little bit later when, as Patty mentioned, you know, she's able to think a little bit more clearly because she's not in the heat of those emotions and paying for your buck later in the day.
Yeah, beautiful. And it strikes me as a nice way to bring the other kids into it so that they're all, like, starting to connect in their day as well. So thank you so much, yeah.
Sure. What a big job you're doing there. Wow.
Yeah, and a lovely way to reflect back is at dinner time, I always say, what's your favourite part of the day? What was something tricky? So there's always that way to pull in what's earlier.
Yeah.
I guess
let's do it
right so I can move on and get on with my day kind of girl. So thanks for the reminder to be approaching this from what's going to help her instead of my timeline. Thank you.
Yeah. Just give her yourself. You know, you don't need to think with her. Just give her yourself. That's what she can do.
Yes.
Okay, I think we've come to the end of our time, Laura. Really clear that you have a lot to offer. How can people get a hold of you, or what would you like to leave in the way of people's ability to contact you?
Absolutely. People are more than welcome to contact me, and I'd be happy to, you know, offer any kind of support or consultation that I can. I have a website. It's at drlaurakaufman.com. So it's drlaurakaufman.com. And so you can find my phone number, email there, and I welcome any contacts from any of you who have any additional questions, anything that you want to follow up on, or if there's something else that's come to mind since our conversation today.
Good. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Good. And on hand-in-hand side, I'll just say that we have several good self-guided courses. There's one on siblings, there's one on sleep, there's one on aggression, helping your child with aggression. There's one on setting limits and building cooperation. And we do talk about play listening in every single one of them, with some really good anecdotes and examples. And so we'd love to have you engage with us and have a chance to, you know, kind of absorb the information about various ways to connect with your child and help them offload their tensions. And we also have a self-guided course on building a listening partnership and easing the stress of parenting. And it's a guide on how to build yourself some good listening support. So lots of resources there, as well as classes and consultations. So we're at handinhandparenting.org, and we'd love to have you sign up for our newsletter. You get a free booklet called Tantrums and Indignation, How to Handle the Fiery Stuff That Your Child Might Be Doing. So we'd love to have you with us. Well, thank you, Laura. I really appreciate your excellent examples and your good thinking. You can tell your mind is very active thinking with parents as they're asking their questions. And I really want to appreciate that about you. Thanks.
Welcome. Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here, and I feel really lucky to have had the opportunity to work with you, partner with you, and to provide any kind of support and collaboration to the parents and caregivers. So this has been a true delight. Thank you very much.
Yeah, sure. And thank you all for working so hard, caring so much, and really putting your best selves forward every moment of every day with your children. So it's a good, hard job, and thank you for doing it so with so much love and energy. So have a good evening.